For those of you that are coming into this session that weren't in the last session, I already presented this session in the last session. My schedule for what I'm supposed to present and my speaker portal is backwards. So I did the two sessions backwards. But it doesn't matter, because I'm going to make sure when I'm going through this session, I'm going to talk about the tools that you need to know, the things you need to know, how to do. The sessions have a lot of similar threads sort of running through them. And in this session, I'm going to do the why your network is slow session right now. Now, in this session, these are all the skills you should have, because you should be able to tell why your network is slow. You really shouldn't have to call someone like me to come out and analyze your traffic, because you know how to analyze your traffic. So I'm going to sort of mix the two together, and when they do the recording, when you can go online and see the recording, I'm recording them in a way that, you know, the sessions have enough separation between them. So they'll be under the correct names and things like that. Huh. Oh my gosh, I got to talking at break time. You know, I'm very fortunate that I get to do this stuff for a living, because it is never, ever, ever boring. I have never been bored doing this stuff. Every day there's something new. Okay, so let me open up the one for this session. Yes. Okay, so this session is going to be the top 10 reasons your network is slow, and you're going to see me. Oh, my name is Laura Chappell. I'm the presenter for this session. I actually have three different companies, but most people are familiar with Wireshark University, and then there's Chappell University, and then there's a company called Protocol Analysis Institute. Just to confuse everybody, we have to have all these different companies. In essence, I'm a protocol analyst. I live, eat, and breathe at the packet level. I listen to communications. And for a lot of people, they can install a TCP/IP network, get it configured beautifully. DHCP is doing everything it needs to do. You've got DNS, you're doing DNSSEC, you've got all this replication taking place in the background the way you want it to work. And yet you may not be familiar with how TCP/IP is actually working in the background. And then when things don't go right, it becomes a guessing process of where might the problem be. It is horrible when I see people sitting there and restarting a switch, restarting a router, restarting a server, re-imaging a drive. You should not have to do that. The packets will always tell you where the problem is. They will always tell you where the problem is. I started doing analysis back in 1987. I think that was the first time I saw packets, and that was an ARCNET network. Yes, I'm very, very old. And since that time, I have never walked into an environment where I'm listening to the traffic and not been able to say, it is that machine, it is that application, it is that server. When I started this company in 1993, the Protocol Analysis Institute, which is the main company, I began in 1993. I was very concerned about going out to customers and tapping in and not being able to find anything of interest. Okay. That was a long time ago. That was 19 years ago, and I have yet to see a network that doesn't have some sort of a weird issue on it. The trace files that I'm going to be using, all except for one, the trace files I'm going to be showing you right now, all the traffic files are available in the LoRa's Lab Kit. Now, I used to hand out the LoRa's Lab Kit DVDs, but after handing out 150,000 DVDs last year, I decided to stop doing that and just make the ISO image available for everyone to download. So you have a phone, you can go ahead and just grab a screenshot there, but the site is lcuportal2.com. All right, so it's an ISO image, it's about a 1.4 gig file, something like that, I don't know. And the artwork for it is there. You can just go burn your own DVD. The case study that sits on that lab kit is a troubleshooting case study. It is one of the top problems that I'm seeing on networks today that have to do with infrastructures affecting the TCP handshake process. And we don't like infrastructure devices mucking around with our packets. Okay? We don't like that at all. So it's a case study where it deals with this really big problem. And I'm seeing this all over the place in the industry. And it's a really weird one, because you might be pointing the wrong direction if you're not familiar with these infrastructures doing these horrible things. So when you get the LoRa's Lab Kit, there's a one-hour video going through this troubleshooting scenario. The trace files of the actual traffic going through this NATing firewall, the trace files from both sides are also on the LoRa's Lab Kit. And you'll find all these other trace files that I'm going to be working with today, with the exception of one trace file that hasn't been released yet. And that will go out later. That is Lore's Lab Kit version 10. Lore's Lab Kit version 11 will be out in the next 3 months, most likely, unless I get distracted on another project. Lore's Lab Kit version 11 is the Security Lab Kit. That is going to have a customized environment for Wireshark to detect all sorts of security breaches. So you've got traffic from a host and you're not sure if it's been compromised, you'll be able to click a couple of buttons and see exactly what it's been compromised with. It will speed up your process of identifying malware on the network tremendously. Yeah, yesterday I went through 300 trace files in a half an hour and detected every single vulnerability in the trace file by just clicking a couple of buttons on this customized version of Wireshark. So that will be coming out with the next version of the lab kit. And the next version of the lab kit will be in the same place as the current one. It'll be at that LCU portal too. And if you're on our mailing list, you'll get a note about that. Okay. Periodically, I do free online trainings with Wireshark too. So if you go to chapelu.com, Chapel University, or you go to wireshark.com, either one of those, they'll have a schedule and it'll say when the free classes are online. I also put up online a 4-part class on the fundamentals of Wireshark. So if you go to that lcuportal2.com, you will see free Wireshark class. You can download the videos and just watch them offline when you get a chance. They're all there, and it's set up into 4 different pieces to get you up to speed. I think everybody should know how to listen to packets. Everybody should listen to packets. If you don't know how to listen to packets, how are you going to know what's going on? You cannot trust, this isn't going to sound right, but you can't trust the vendors. Okay? You cannot trust that somebody's going to say, oh, you know, this is the way we do this. We have this feature, and this feature does this. The only way to know what the feature is really doing is to take the traffic and see how that feature really works. There have been a number of times when I've gone to conferences and tapped into the show network for a beta product to see if it does what it says it does. And I'm amazed to find out, oh, it doesn't. It doesn't do anything like that. In the olden days, it used to be moving from the world of IPX to IP. How many of you remember those days? Oh, see, there's some still alive. Good. We've got to get like a technical old folks home that we put together where we can like, you know, open up computers and swap out chipsets and stuff like that. But anyway, back in the olden days, when you go to conferences, you tap into the show network. And I remember when an organization said that they had a full new protocol stack and they weren't doing embedding and all these things. And you looked at the traffic and it was a total lie, all smoke and mirrors. And it's amazing things what you find when you listen to the traffic. So here are the top 10 problems that I find in networks. And every year I come out with this top 10 list, and it keeps getting adjusted based on the stuff that I find most recently. So they are not in any specific order, because they kind of rotate. So like sometimes I'll find with 1 month, I will see bandwidth hogging seems to be everything I keep seeing. And another month, it'll be path issues. And then another month, all of a sudden, somebody's got some queuing problem. Somebody didn't understand differentiated services code point or something weird. So I'm going to go through these with you. And as I go through these, I'm going to be opening up trace files, traffic files, to show you what it looks like. Because you should be able to detect these things very, very easily in a trace file. Simply capture the packets to or from the complaining host. Rule number one, be as close to the complaining host or the suspect host, in the case of potential security breach, as you can possibly stand being. Capture as close as you can be to that host, because you want to get all the round-trip times and all of the TCP errors from their perspective. You have to know how to work Wireshark. In the last class, I gave a number of tools that people should understand. And the sysinternals tool set, yes. You all should understand Nmap. You should know how to use Nmap. Okay? You should know how to do reconnaissance against a target system to see what it is saying it offers. And for those of you that are in the world of security, if you haven't heard the name Suricata, it is time that you know the name Suricata. Okay? Right now, Snort is very well known in the intrusion detection arena, but Suricata will most likely replace Snort in the future as far as a popular intrusion detection tool. It is called Suricata, and I have notes from the last class. I'll just put up on the screen in case you want to take those. You can go to emergingthreats.net. That's also where we get our Snort rules for free. Okay, emergentthreats.net. That's also where you can get Suricata. And you can get the link over to Suricata, and you can get the Suricata rules over there for free. And you can read about Suricata. There's other tools that I recommend all the time. A hex editor, you should all know how to work with a hex editor. If you're going to be rebuilding any sort of video streams, you need VLC. VLC is the best playback tool out there still. NetScan Tools is another tool that I've been using, I work with. Regular Expressions is one of the skill sets that I think everybody should have in the world of IT. You better understand what Regular Expressions is, because you're going to be working with tools that use Regular Expressions, such as Nmap or Wireshark or Suricata, or it's just a way we represent a string. All right, so let's go through these top 10 issues. First of all, high latency. There are three different locations where we talk about latency. It's either path latency, which means it's taking a long time for my packet to get over to a target and the response packet to get back, just at the TCP layer. So best way to know that that's happening is to do a SYN, to do a handshake, and look at how long it takes for the SYNAC or the reset to come back. That's giving you your round-trip path latency. It's just a snapshot, though. It may be better in a moment, it may be worse in a moment, but it's a good snapshot, a good place to start. Client latency is when a client sits there and goes, SYN, and the server goes, SYNAC, and the client goes, ACK, so you got the handshake, and then the client sits there and goes, do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Oh, yeah. I want to get this file. It's like, what took you so long? You're the stupid goob that went and made the connection to the server, and now you don't know what you're asking? Come on. Okay, that would be client latency there, when we see a delay before a client asking for the next thing. Sometimes client latency is user latency. When you sit there and look at traffic, and it's like, what took the client so long to ask for the next thing? Well, because the user didn't click on the screen. They're looking, going, well, click. Okay, well, we're waiting for the user. So you have to be careful of that. Is that request going out for something that the user would have clicked on? All right. Server latency. I showed this in the last session. I'm probably going to bring it up again because it's so funny. Some of my trace files are really, really funny, and the security ones are going to be hysterical. Watch for the boyfriend-girlfriend hack in the next set. It really is a live trace file taken at a customer. It really is a little love affair gone wrong at the company, and they're attacking each other's systems. It's so funny. Oh, my God. You know, and the thing is, you just want to walk over to them and go, don't do that over TCP, do it over UDP. Kill that system. Anyway. So server latency. I'll show you a trace file of this in a bit. But server latency is where you sit there and you go, SYNAC, ACK, you finish the handshake, and you say, hey, get me that information, and the server immediately returns an acknowledgement saying, got your request, and here's the data. When you have to sit and wait for a while like that, it's the server that's slowing things down. All right, packet loss is always going to affect performance, and we're going to graph out some packet loss. Window scaling problems, I talked about this with the last group. If you are an XP shop, meaning you still have XP systems on your network, when you put in Service Pack 2, you got this wonderful capability in Service Pack 2 called window scaling. It did not enable itself by default, though. And the registry entry is not even there. You must put it in from scratch. And it's not just one registry setting. These people go in and they go, yeah, I added that registry setting. Yeah, but did you set that other one? Oh, I didn't do that. Well, then it's worthless. It is a two-step process to enable window scaling. So I'm going to show you a window scaling problem in here. But RFC 1323 defines how this window scaling works. All you have to do is do an online search for, it's so hard not to say Google this. No, I mean Bing this. I want you to do an... Well, it's funny, I have a lot of friends at Microsoft, and this one friend of mine, he goes, you know what, Google's just a verb. That's all it is. It's just a verb. Okay, whatever. All right. So it's Bing, but it sounds a little sexual to me. I don't know. I've seen those shirts, I binged your grandmother. Oh, terrible. I like them, but they're so bad, you know? But then again, I Googled your grandmother does not sound good either. Anyway. Okay, so what was that? So what you want to do is you want to go online, you want to search for RFC 1323 Windows XP. And once you do that, the articles you're going to see out there are going to be all about how to set this. I know one of mine pops up there. There's another one from a university that has step-by-step instructions on how to set this up. What you're basically doing is you're taking the amount of received buffer space and you're multiplying it by a certain factor. So instead of saying, I have just this little tiny, tiny amount of buffer space to receive data on this high-speed network with these really big files, no, I've got this much data space, so I'm not going to slow you down. Just keep going. I've got lots of buffer space. In the XP environment, this is the number one reason why we see performance problems is Windows scaling. So if you've got XP, make sure that you enable Windows scaling. All right, path queuing. Wow. If you went and you read the IP RFC, the original IP RFC, you would miss the world that we live in today. We do not have precedence and type of service bits anymore. Do you remember those? We learned, hopefully you remember because you all have been into packets for a long time. But you would learn about this type of service and the precedence bits and all. We don't have that. We have something called differentiated services code point. It is quality of service defined in the IP header. So I'm going to pop out of this right now and take you right to trace file where we've got a problem with this setting. Oops. Let me pop over and let's see. This is Wireshark version 1.6.5. I am going to go to 1.7.2, the development version, in a little bit. But I'll start with 1.6.5. I'm going to open up a trace file, and this is VoIP communications. This is a trace file called VoIP-extension. Now, if I look in the IP header in this packet, you'll see this area where in the olden days it used to say type of service and precedence. Those were the bits that we used to have there. We haven't used type of service and precedence in forever, and if you guys are still got, you've still got interconnecting devices with type of service and precedent bit settings, you got to come up to the current world. We use differentiated services code point and explicit congestion notification transport devicing right there. So what you'll see right here is a prioritization for this packet. And it is set by the application. So I write an application, and I can say, hey, when my communications go up from this application, I would like a higher priority than everybody else on the network. I want you to set in the IP header this differentiated services code point value up to some number, whatever it is. We can see that this particular packet has a setting of assured forwarding. We do not want to see that traffic going from this VoIP phone to another VoIP phone has a different quality of service than the other VoIP phone coming back. We would like asynchronous quality of service. Otherwise, what you end up with is, I'm talking to you and everything sounds good from my phone, but when you talk, it sounds like crap because you have a lower priority, which means that your traffic is going to be buffered and, if need be, dropped along the way on the path. So here's how we can tell that we have a problem in this trace file. I showed this in the last class. This is something everybody should know how to do in Wireshark. Very easy. Build a new column. Add a column up on top that shows us some information. I'm going to highlight this differentiated services code point line. I'm going to right mouse click. Select it. I'm going to right mouse click. And I'm going to choose apply as column. Now I'm going to center this text in the column so it's a little easier to see. And what I have in this trace file is the .10 host is a VoIP phone. .11 is the call manager system. So I've got the VoIP phone connecting to the call manager. It's going to go to the auto attendant of the call manager, and then later on the two phones will talk directly to each other. But when this phone is talking to call manager, it has a differentiated services code point value of 26, whereas when the call manager talks back, it has no priority. So we have greater priority on our traffic going to the call manager than we have for the traffic coming back. And that is for the call setup routine. This is the SIP traffic here. When we get to RTP, real-time data transport protocol, this is the call stuff. This is the auto attendant that's going to answer the line. We can see that we also have a different prioritization. From the phone, it sets the priority to 46, and when the call manager talks back, it is 0. So we have this unequal prioritization of traffic. And when we look at this VoIP call and we start looking at, this is common in VoIP. Especially if you start mixing phones, mixing vendors or mixing models of phones from a single vendor. I can buy two VoIP phones from a vendor, the same exact make, but different model numbers, and they'll come up with different differentiated services code point settings. Usually these are settings you can go and you can change in the setup of the phone so that everything kind of matches and you don't have higher priority for somebody. Or you set your phone to be really high priority and everybody else is really low. I was like, I don't know why you guys always complain. I talk from my phone and I can, you know, you guys always say you can hear me. And I don't care about hearing you. Click. Yeah. All right. Priority minus 255. Okay. So that's something that you want to watch for. That is that asynchronous quality of service, number six here. Okay, hobbled communications. What does hobbled communications mean? Hobbled communications are when an application does not take advantage of what TCP/IP can do. An example of this would be using this fabulous tool called iPerf. If you are not familiar with iPerf, it is a great tool. It is a throughput testing tool. I run iPerf on a client, I run iPerf on a server. Sitting at the client, I begin my iPerf throughput test, and I look to see exactly how much data I can get on between those two devices across that path. By default, iPerf is hobbled. It does little itty-bitty data flows. And so we see this big gap between what's going on and what should be taking place. I'll graph that in a moment, because we can actually see that in Wireshark when an application's not taking advantage of what TCP can do. I'm also going to take you out to a trace file. This one is one that is not publicly available at this time. It will go out with the next lab kit. But this trace file, let's see where I have this trace file, SB. No, it is in my... Okay, so we have a new format for trace files. It is called PCAP-NG. Excuse me. It's called PCAP-NG. So this trace file is a PCAP-NG trace file. We're no longer going to be using just .pcap. The NG stands for next generation, and the new format for trace files and the new version of Wireshark allows us to put in notes about the trace file right inside of the trace file. So it contains metadata now. There are a lot of other things we'll be able to do going to the new format. The first thing you'll notice when this trace file comes up is that every packet has a black background and a red foreground. And that is because Wireshark is saying that there's a problem with the packet. It's hitting a coloring rule for bad TCP. If you ever want to know why a packet is colored a certain way in Wireshark, you can expand the frame section of the packet. And down at the bottom of the frame section, there will be something that says there's something wrong with the packet. Okay, this one is marked with a black background and a red foreground because it supposedly has checksum errors. It has an IP header checksum error. That's why the IP header was in red right there. It's to say that it has a bad checksum. Okay. This is the first thing we turn off in Wireshark, the bad checksum coloring rule. It is the big red herring out there. Oh, you got bad checksums. Oh, you got bad checksums. Oh, your checksums are lousy. If my checksums were bad, I would not have been able to complete the three-way handshake. That's a lie. My checksum must be good. The tool, the system that we are taking this trace file on supports task offloading. The checksum is not calculated in the TCP/IP stack. The checksum is calculated by the network interface card on the way out. Okay? So when Wireshark sees it, it doesn't have the checksum calculated. So we're going to simply turn off that coloring rule. So I'm going to go down here to bad checksums, checksum errors right here. And I'm going to just disable it. Oh, that's a lot better. I also don't need my differentiated services code point column, so I'm going to right mouse click and remove that column. All right, so this trace file is showing a file transfer routine. We have a host that is sending data to another system. We can see in the SYN packet, the handshake request comes from 10.1.1.1 going to 10.6.6.6. There's the SYN packet. There's the SYNAC coming back. There's the ACK. And then we can see the data begin to flow. So this is being done as a test to see how much data we can get across this line. We're going to add something to Wireshark. We're going to add a setting to Wireshark that is not there by default. We're going to tell Wireshark to track the number of bytes in flight. How many unacknowledged bytes are sitting between these two hosts? Because as the network is seen as performing properly, I should be able to have a lot more outstanding data bytes. I should be able to send you packet, 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 and then you should be able to ACK back to me. And I should be able to do packet, 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 and then you ACK back to me eventually for the whole set. Oh, wait a minute. We're at a Microsoft conference. A little exception to that rule. All right. At Microsoft, the current stack does something called delayed ACKs, which is kind of that ability to say, oh, you keep sending me data, keep sending me data, and if everything's going well, I will only send you an acknowledgement every 200 milliseconds. So you send data, 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 and oh, 200 milliseconds is up, I'm going to ACK whatever I've received from you. Data, 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 oh, I'm going to ACK whatever I've received from you. That is the way the industry typically does TCP stuff with delayed ACKs. It's really, really nice. Except for some reason, and maybe somebody, anybody here from Microsoft? and maybe if you know why you would do this, you could tell me. But for some reason, there is a setting on the Windows hosts, including the servers, that says, if you haven't acknowledged the previous data packet, you must acknowledge this one. So if a data packet comes in, oh, I'm not going to acknowledge that one. Another one comes in. Did I acknowledge the previous one? No, I better acknowledge this one. So we have this rhythm on purely Microsoft networks. Data, data, ACK. 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 Where everywhere else it's like data, 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 ACK. Data, 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 ACK. I mean, it's amazing the difference between the two, but oh well. That's one of the things where we can tell we're on a Microsoft network when we look at that kind of a pattern. So in this particular situation, I will tell you that we are not on a Microsoft network. We're on a different network. Sorry, I've got a bunch of ice in my mouth. Or maybe, oh my God. Oh, this is really tacky, sorry. you know. Oh my God, that presenter, did you see that? She like spit her ice out right from kind of thing. This is not being video recorded, is it? It's just audio? Oh, that's funny. We should remember that. Next time I should do something really funny just for the listening group that didn't.
See, if you'd shown up, you would have seen that, but you didn't.
All right. So in this particular situation, we have this host that's doing this test. And you can see down below we have this put request. And they're just sending this big, huge stream across. So we want Wireshark to tell us how many unacknowledged bytes are sitting out on the network at any one time. So in the TCP header portion, I'm going to right mouse click, and I'm going to go to Protocol Preferences, and I'm going to look at this setting right here. Now, I've already gone in and done some changes to my system, but that's the setting I want to have on, track number of bytes in flight. And on your systems, it's not the default to have that on. But when you've got track number of bytes in flight enabled, then, at the end of the TCP header, if you expand them, you'd see this area where it says sequence slash ACK, or SEQ slash ACK analysis, and there's the bytes in flight count. And I'm going to right mouse click, and I'm going to apply that as a column. Okay. So now I have a bytes in flight column, and I can watch as one host is sending data over to another host. And if everything goes well, I should never see a static number showing up. I should never see a static number showing up. It should constantly be sort of moving between these different numbers. We just keep sending data bytes, and as you acknowledge them, this number goes down. And when you don't acknowledge them, this number stays the same. So what we do is we take the bytes in flight, and we want to see, did we hit a ceiling at all? Did we hit a point where somebody stopped sending more than, you know, a certain number? So by clicking on the bytes in flight column, we can go to the very top, and that is the ceiling. We have a sender who will not allow more than this number of bytes to be outstanding at any one time, even though the network can handle it and the receiver's buffer space is really, really nice. Big buffer space, optimized receiving system, pathetic sender. Apple. This is, hey, I love Apple. You cannot take this iPhone out of my cold, dead hands. But on the Apple TCP/IP stack, they have a send buffer setting, which we don't have in the Windows environment. We don't go in and mess with the send buffer settings. But they have a send buffer setting, as well as a window size setting for the receive side. They have a send buffer setting, and the setting is too low, which means that if you're doing data transfer and you're taking your, you know, Mac system and you're going to put it side by side with a bunch of different operating systems, anything that's sent from the Mac on that network is going to be slower performance-wise than all the other hosts out there. It's just their setting is too low. And when you go out on the internet, those of you that have Macs or you're going to be working in a mixed environment where you've got some Mac users and you got, you know, Linux and Windows and all that stuff, you just need to go out on the internet and just do a search for Mac send buffer setting, and you'll see how to bump that up. And all of a sudden, you'll see that you can improve the throughput tremendously on sending. But that kind of stuff is stuff that you see just by looking at the packets. Knowing TCP/IP really, really well and knowing how Wireshark can display TCP/IP to you, it'll always point you to, you know what, this is where the problem is, this is where the problem is, this is where the problem is. I love Apple products. I think they are so funny. You know, let's look at an iPhone and what an iPhone says. Okay? Just because I think they're so much fun. Let's just go ahead and do this. This trace file I'm going to open up is out and available on the Laura's Lab Kit. This trace file is called WLAN. No. There's an iPad one, but ARP. Wait. There it is. It is. Okay, it's a trace file called ARP-iPhone Startup. And this is what it looks like when an iPhone starts up and wants to get on the wireless network. It is psychotic. It needs medication. And I love my iPhone, but I know you are sick. So I will take care of you. I will take care of you and love you. All right. Some of the sickness is intentional. You know? It's really weird. It's like it was intentional. Look at this stuff at the beginning. If you're familiar with how ARP works, we come up and we do a gratuitous ARP. We say, hey, this is the IP address we want. Does anybody have that? No. Well, wait a second. Well, this is the one we want. Does anybody have that? No. Well, wait a second. This is the one we want. Does anybody have that? No. Okay, then we'll initialize the stack. But in here, we've got this packet going out saying, hey, who's got 192.168.0.108? I'm not going to tell you who I am. I'm 0.0.0.0. Well, that's weird. We would expect you to put in what your IP address is or what IP address you want in that packet. That would make it a gratuitous ARP packet. And then you'd wait 1 second. It'd be really wonderful. And here this thing keeps going, la, 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 la. Anybody? 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 Stealth mode checking here. And then we see a true gratuitous ARP. Now, the spec says to do a gratuitous ARP, you're testing for a duplicate address on the network. You send one of these out, and you must be patient. Wait 1 second. Give people time to answer. Oh, no. Oh, no. This better be coming back fast. This time column on the left-hand side is set for the default. I'm going to change it so it shows me how much time there is from the end of one packet to the end of the next. I'm going to go to View, Time Display Format, Second Since Previous Displayed Packet. Ooh, we're a little bit anal, are we? Okay. That, this is probably going to be one of those presentations, beep, 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 beep. I'm sorry, that one did not get uploaded properly. There's a little screen issue there. All right, so here we've got the iPhone went out and said, hey, anybody else have 192.168.0.108? Hey, anybody else there? Anybody, anybody, anybody? It's not even waiting a full second, which is what you're supposed to do. And then look what it does. How about 192.168.0.1? How about it? 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 Oh, what about this? Maybe this network isn't being managed after all. huh, then they wouldn't notice how badly I'm performing. Okay, so does a gratuitous or an ARP going out, who has 169.254.255.255? If anybody out there has that, then they're in big, big trouble, you know? Nobody's running the show. And it follows it with a really interesting one saying, well, what about just 0.0.0.108? I don't know, I'm just picking stuff out of my butt. I don't know, you look at this and you think, what is wrong with you? Oh, can I still play Angry Birds? Oh, gosh. Oh, so you look at this psychotic behavior, and this is intentional. This is intentional. It just has to be. Nobody can make this number of mistakes and have no idea, right? Okay. So part of what you're seeing here is you're seeing bonjour. Okay, bonjour, aka zero configuration networking in the Windows environment, okay? But bonjour is the piece that is made so that this phone kind of sits there and goes, la 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 la, I will talk to anybody and nobody has to be in charge, and oh, hi, I'm an iPhone, and if you're there, I will discover you, and I will not assume we have a DNS server or a DHCP server or, you know, we have anything that assigns addresses or manages this. Can it just work? Not work well, but can it just work? And it causes all this crap on the network. I mean, if you walk into a company that's got iPhones for their primary phone system, it's hysterical in the morning. It's like you get there in that parking lot and you're just waiting and all the cars come in and the network's like, oh crap, here they come. They look really good, but they're mean. All right. Oh, gosh. Oh, so there's another trace on there, wireless LAN of an iPad starting up. And, you know, I love Apple. They're one of my customers. I think they have a really good sense of humor now. But they kind of have to. I mean, you know, I remember when Microsoft didn't have a very good sense of humor. You know, Windows for work groups and Windows 95. In fact, I have a trace file from Windows 95 that I keep with my trace files just to remember how funny Microsoft used to be. It's a trace file called DHCP Jerk Takes Address No Permission. I just loved it. It was just so much fun back then. All right. So, signal interference. Looking at wireless LAN communications. I'm going to show you what it looks like when we have signal interference on a wireless network. This is how easily we can detect this with Wireshark, but whenever I'm working on a wireless network, I will always run a Wi-Spy adapter on that network. I will run a Wi-Spy adapter with channelizer software because that will show me all of the RF energy around me, whether it is from wireless networks or it is from video transmitters. Those exit signs right there emit noise. So you really don't want to have an access point by one of those types of exit signs. It's amazing the things that transmit noise. Highly recommend that you get one of these. I mean, it's the least expensive spectrum analyzer that does a really good job. So it's the Wi-Spy adapter. It's made by a company called MetaGeek. You can go to metageek.net. Ah, saved my butt a million times. Because I can go to a wireless network and pick up all the wireless traffic, and it's like retransmission. From my viewpoint, I can't detect why the packets are being mangled and having to be and they have to be retransmitted. At a packet level, I just see that, okay, we have mangled packets and somebody's having to retransmit these 802.11 packets. But I can't tell why. I bring up the Wi-Spy adapter, and it's like, oh, okay, I can see why, because we've got interference, and it's this level of signal strength, and it's sitting in this frequency. So, yes, that is why we have the packet loss, the retransmissions. So I'm going to open up a wireless trace file. Again, this is a trace file that you have access to. This is WLAN. I'll do WLAN video download. Now, you will see a lack of coloring by default in Wireshark for wireless communications. There just aren't any interesting coloring rules put in there. But I'm going to build a coloring rule to tell me when I have retransmissions. Do you see on the right-hand side on this trace file, you'll see all these dot, 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 and there's little things, okay? This right here is representing a set of fields inside of the packet. And anytime you see that capital R, that's a retransmission of a packet. So I'm going to build a coloring rule that tells me whenever I have these retransmissions. But first, let me open up the wireless packet. These were all taken by the air PCAP adapter, so it automatically put on a radio tap header. That's a pseudo header. It's a special header put on by the receiving air PCAP adapter. It tells me what the signal strength is and the noise and the quality at the time of receipt. And then we can see the 802.11, the actual packet. It's a data packet in here. I'm going to expand the frame control flag section, and there's the bit that indicates if this is a retransmission. This is not a TCP retransmission. This is an 802.11, a wireless retransmission. I want to know anytime I have these packets in a trace file. So I'm going to right mouse click, say I want to colorize this with a filter. I want to make a brand new coloring rule. It is a troubleshooting coloring rule, which I always start the name with a capital T. WLAN retries. Background color. I use orange as my butt ugly color. And orange is safe. Deeper purples are safe. The other ones might conflict with some of the default coloring rules. So I just typed in orange and then hit tab. I'm going to say OK. There's what it looks like. Say OK. And the last thing you have to remember is to move your butt uglies up. Okay? These packets are processed in order, so I want to make sure that these are at the top of the list always when I build these butt ugly coloring rules. I've got some other ones in there. And I will say OK. Now, anytime I open up wireless traffic from a customer, a trace file from them, it will be screaming at me that we have a problem with packet loss on the wireless network. This trace file has definitely got some problems with interference. That's my Xbox interfering with my wireless network. Unfortunately. There is, if you get the Wi-Spy adapter, you'll see the signatures of different products and the type of RF energy they give off. And the Xbox has this really serious haze that kind of goes across the whole entire spectrum. And because of that, I can't have an Xbox in my office anymore. Microsoft, I would like you to fix that so I can have my Xboxes sitting in my office to play with. All right. I have to have the Xboxes in my office because my kids go into my office sometimes and my son is like, oh yeah, I'm doing my homework. It's like, yeah, sure, yeah. There are ways to deal with that. I am going to be making a new profile this year that's a joke. It's called, so this is what a profile is. In Wireshark, in the bottom right-hand corner, I have a profile called Newbie. It's just my new way of dealing with colors and filters and preference settings and things like that. On this system, I also have one called SEC01. I have one called Master Security Profile. I have one called Fun and Games, Master Troubleshooting. You know, I have all these different profiles, which are configurations for Wireshark. And that's the one that goes orange when it sees those things. So I have a new one that's coming up that's the Teen Profile. It will detect any game being played on the network, any skank talk from my son to his girlfriend. It will come up, bing! Oh, it's just for fun. Of course, my son's like, you know, I don't really think that's funny, Mom. He always says, have you ever noticed sometimes, Mom, when you're kind of laughing at your jokes and nobody else is laughing? I was like, no, I don't notice that because I'm laughing. I don't know what's going on around me. He's like, no kidding. So, all right. Okay, so that's what it looks like when we see any retries in wireless. It's really easy to detect as long as you can capture those packets. I'm going to go up now, and I'm going to show you the window scaling issue as well as packet loss. This trace file has got three problems in it. It has high path latency, it has packet loss, and it has a window scaling problem. The window size is not large enough. So the trace file is called http-download-bad. Now I'm going to take you into this one first, and then I'm going to show you a problem that Wireshark can't detect by default. We have to customize Wireshark to see it. It should have been built into Wireshark, but so should have coloring for retries. That should be in there by default. I always tell Gerald, if I can make a coloring rule on that, Gerald, you should have that in as a default coloring rule. And he's like, well, you know, you and nobody else asked for that. So I'm like, okay, all right. So we're going to open up this http-download-bad. Now, remember how I set that time column? I said, tell me from the end of one packet to the end of the next. I did that by selecting view, time display format, and seconds since previous displayed packet. All right. So I want to see from the end of one packet to the end of the next packet. When you do that, you've got a user that's complaining about performance. The first thing we do is we look for large gaps in time. Okay? The first thing we do, we look for these large gaps in time. And we can do that now because we've set up that time column by just clicking on it twice to sort the time column and then going to the first packet in the sorted list. This is just one file being downloaded. And at some point during the file download, we have a 16-second delay, we have an 8-second delay, we have a 4-second delay, a 2-second delay, and a 1-second delay. So that is this big, ugly point. If you want to find where these delays happen, you can go to statistics and IO graph, and you can see a big drop in the throughput. So that's the point I want to troubleshoot. That's the primary point. This right here is because of a Windows 0 condition. We have a client that has run out of buffer space. This is what it looks like. It is really easy to tell. It's going to be this big area with a black background, red foreground. Wireshark's going to say, window full. This is the last packet that will fill the receiver's buffer. And then the receiver starts going, zero window. Go away. Shut up. I hate you. But I love you. Zero window. I hate you still. But I've always loved you. I never loved you. Oh, but I bought you flowers. Yeah, but I'm allergic to flowers. Oh, but I sang you that song. You sing terribly. So this keeps going on and on and on and on and on until all of a sudden, wait, you have a car? So this is the one. The window update is a good thing. The window update is a good thing. It means that we suddenly have some buffer space available. Wireshark has a mistake right now. Nice climbing over the chairs. Wow, because you didn't want to disturb anybody around you. Shh. That was so nerdy. I'm sorry. That was funny. I've never seen anybody do that. That was pretty good. And you know what? What would have been funny is if the chair had tipped over. Oh, my God. That would not have been funny. I'm kidding. So we've got this window update, and the window update is a good thing. It means that somebody's saying, I have enough buffer space, but Wireshark has a problem right now. It thinks that it's a bad TCP packet. It's got this coloring for bad TCP, so I'm going to fix that problem in Wireshark. You don't have to fix this problem in the next version of Wireshark. It's been fixed already. But I'm going to go into my coloring rules up here, which is this button where it has all these colors in it. And then there's bad TCP right there, and I'm going to double-click on it, and I'm going to make an exception to this coloring rule. I'm going to say and, or ampersand not, tcp.analysis.window_update. So I'm going to tell it, hey, anything that matches the TCP analysis flags, unless it's a window update packet, you can color those, but not the window updates. Change that, and now we see the window updates go back to their original color, which is what we want to see. In essence, a Windows 0 condition is caused when a receiver has no buffer space available. That's the absolute definition of what a Windows 0 is. I have no buffer space available, and therefore I tell you, shut up, shut up, shut up. What causes that? Why would somebody say I have no buffer space available? Because an application is not taking data out of the buffer in a timely manner. The application is not keeping up with the data transfer speeds. So you've got this gig link now to your host. You're pulling down not small little files, but big fat files. And the application cannot keep up with the throughput rates, the receive rates. So we've got an application here that is just not going down and not keeping up with what's happening at the lower layers. We are not allowed to receive data and shove it up to the application, regardless of what the TCP/IP spec says about this push flag. We do not implement that the way the specs say. We don't shove data up because it has a push flag set. That's terrible. What if the app's not ready? Then we have inter-process packet loss. That's terrible. Okay. So ultimately, it is the application that is the problem here. Why is the application so slow? Can we update the application? You know, a Band-Aid for this is to increase the receive window size. by going in and altering the Windows scale value on an XP box. Now, a Windows 7 box is a little bit different. Windows 7 boxes have auto-tuning enabled. I would love to be able to auto-tune the auto-tune, okay? I don't like that I lost so much of my control over the way TCP works. So I'm one of those people that I would really prefer to have all these settings back, and I'd like to be able to alter things myself. But in the Windows 7 environment, it's really interesting when you have this kind of a situation. Because what you'll see is you'll see that maybe the window size value is going down, 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 and you might hit a Windows 0, and immediately following it, you'll see a Windows update. You'll see immediately after the Windows 0 is a window update. That app is given the priority to do what it needs to do to get everything out of there in a Windows 0 condition so it can move forward. You don't have these big wait times anymore. You know, the stack understands, okay, we got a problem here. We got to give this guy some processing power. We got to get this stuff out of the buffer. So it's very different. You'll still hit a Windows 0, but you won't stay in this kind of a condition. Now, this trace file has more than one problem. And if we pull up this graph, this IO graph, if you click at a high point, you'll see everything's green and fabulous in the background. And then you go hit on a low point, ooh, okay. All right, black background, red foreground is the coloring rule for bad TCP. Let's go take a look at this bad TCP stuff. And what you have is you have packet loss. No matter what anybody says about TCP being able to recover easily from packet loss, it doesn't affect the traffic at all. Oh no, we've got all these new stacks and we've done all this research. That is a bunch of crap. Look at the traffic. You will always see a drop in the IO graph when packet loss occurs, even if it's a single packet. A single packet, okay, it happens. Two packets, okay, it happens. Three, I hope it doesn't happen too often. Four, all bets are off, your network is crap. You lose four packets in a row on TCP and your life is a nightmarish hell. Even Sally Floyd didn't even include four packets lost at a time in all of her mathematical equations on recovery. Because at that point, it's like, ew, God, let's just not even talk about that, you know? I want to go work at McDonald's. All right, so we have packet loss in here. What's nice about this particular communication is that when these two did their TCP handshake, they set up selective acknowledgments. And all of you want selective acknowledgments on in every TCP handshake. So this is what you want to look for. Anytime someone complains about performance at all, and it's an application that runs on top of TCP, which all the really cool stuff really does, I want you to look at the handshake first. Look at what happened in the handshake. What did they say they could do? In this particular packet, the first packet of the handshake, in the TCP header, I'm going to the options area. It's the end of the TCP header. This is the client saying what its capabilities are. This client says maximum segment size of 1,460 bytes. That's how much data can sit after a TCP header. Great. NOP is just a placeholder because TCP headers have to end on a 4-byte boundary, so we just have to throw these things in to make sure that happens. Window scaling. I support window scaling, and in fact, you can multiply whatever I say my window size field is, you can multiply that by 4. There's the window size field value up above, 65535. It's only a 2-byte field, that's all we can say. And then there's padding, and then after that, I support selective acknowledgments. That's great, but if the server doesn't support selective acknowledgments, you may not use it. If a stinky, lousy, cruddy device along the path strips out a TCP option from the server that says selective acknowledgments, then you may not use it, Cisco. That was a little bug that was in the ASA box. We would go and strip out selective acknowledgments, and it was like, wow, every time we have packet loss, it takes us forever to recover. Everything's so slow. Oh, because I'm a Cisco box. I'm in the middle. I'm all powerful. Puh, puh. Okay. All right. So in this particular situation, let's look at what the server says it can do, and we want to see that it supports selective acknowledgments and window scaling, hopefully. So here's a server coming back, hey, maximum segment size, 1460. I support selective acknowledgments too. If the server doesn't say anything about selective acknowledgments, then the client can't use it. They both have to use it. And window scaling, you can multiply my window size field by 128. Whew. Whew. Of course, later it sets its window size value at 50. It's like, look at this rocket engine. Isn't this great? Let's put it on this skateboard. All right. So the server says window scaling. Client says window scaling. Client says SAC. Server says SAC. Everything's great. So this is how we're going to recover from packet loss. I'm going to go back to, I believe it was packet 640 somewhere. I don't know. Somewhere around here we started having our packet loss. There it is. All right. So this is the difference between not having window scaling and having, not having selective acknowledgments and having selective acknowledgments. If I do not have selective acknowledgments enabled in my connection, I don't support it or the server doesn't support it, whatever. If the server's sending me packets, and I'm just going to use the packets just by packet number. So server sends me packet number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. But packet number 3 goes missing along the path. Maybe it's that Cisco ASA box dropping it. I don't know. But packet number 3 doesn't get to me. From my perspective, I don't use selective acknowledgments at this point. I would sit there and I would get packet 1, 2, 4, 5, 6. And when I see 4 in there, I go, where's 3? Where's 3? Where's 3? And the server would send me, after hearing me complain 3 times in a row, it would send me number 3 and then 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 again. It would send me everything from the point of packet loss up to where it is currently in the data flow. This client and server support selective acknowledgments. So watch how it does this recovery. And you all want to see selective acknowledgments set up in all the handshakes. It's fabulous. Wireshark says the previous segment was lost. It tracks the sequence number of every single data packet sent, the sequence value in there to say, oh, we skipped. All of a sudden, we lost something. Every time you see these duplicate acknowledgments, that is the mother-in-law process. Where is it? Where is it? Where is it? Where is it? You're going to burn that. You're going to burn that. Do you think you got to put gravy on that? Do you think you got to stuff that turkey? Do you think you got to turn down the burner? Have you basted the turkey enough? Blah, 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 blah. Whining, complaining, whining, complaining, whining, complaining. That's what a duplicate ACK is. It is a system sitting there saying, I didn't get something. I didn't get something. I didn't get something. Where is it? 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 And it will not shut up until it gets what it asked for. Hence the mother-in-law name. Okay. So look at this packet, though. This duplicate ACK is basically a complaint. Let's look at what the server was sending up above. Right here in packet 644, the server sent this sequence number. Let's see what sequence number it was on. Let's see. Okay. So this server is on sequence number 487970. And then the next packet from the server was 490890. Wireshark always tells you what the next number should be. So if I go up above, we're expecting to see 489430. But instead, we see 490890. So it jumped a packet. The client in the duplicate ACK, the acknowledgement number field is always what you expect to see from the other side next as far as sequence numbers. This is the one, it will stay with that number constantly until it gets that particular sequence number from the server. So the client sits there and goes, where is it? And then down below, where is it? Down below, where is it? Duplicate ACK 1, duplicate ACK 2, duplicate ACK 3. This is this duplicate acknowledgement process. Meanwhile, we can see that the server's sending data to the client still. It's not stopping the server from continuing to send data to that client. And every one of these duplicate acknowledgments has got this really interesting area down below where we have SAC, selective acknowledgments, a left edge and a right edge acknowledging the other data that's coming down since the lost packet. So this is my way of saying, hey, where's 3? Oh, I got 4, 5, 6. Where's 3? Oh, I got 4, 5, 6, 7. Where's 3? Oh, I got 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. We keep shifting the right edge as data keeps coming down. The left edge stays the same because that's the first packet after the packet loss occurred. If everything goes well, at some point, this server's going to retransmit this requested missing packet. And we can see that this client's asking again and again and again, uh-oh, we have packet loss again. We haven't even recovered from the first one. So we can't ask for this one until we've recovered from the previous one. We look at the selective acknowledgement information now, And now we have two left edges and right edges. I'm going to scroll down here so we can see in these. Let me get just past the packet loss. Okay, there's a duplicate ACK. So now you'll see that we have two selective acknowledgement left edge, right edges. Okay, I got the first set, but I'm still missing the first packet. And now I've got the second set, which implies we lost another packet. And we keep changing the right edge on the new set. And hopefully at some point we'll get the missing packet. So this is where TCP/IP is funny. Because as we watch this taking place, we have another packet that's lost. Now, we look at the SAC information, and guess what? We only have two left edge, right edge sets. We dumped the first one, assuming that you had heard it because we said it so many times. You probably got that one, so you probably don't need that left edge, right edge stuff. We acknowledged all of that. So I'm only going to have two left edge, right edge sets at any one point. I only have two of those going on at a time. And there it is. There's our fast retransmission. It's called a fast retransmission. Not because it's really fast, though. That's so literal. Okay. This is called a fast retransmission because it is, excuse me, it is the response to the fast recovery process. This client supports fast recovery. Fast recovery is the mother-in-law process. Not all TCP/IP stacks out there support fast recovery. Some of them are in ganja mode. Okay? Ganja mode. I should write a technical book with all these funky things in them someday. So ganja mode is basically the opposite of fast recovery. In fast recovery, you're just like, okay, I'm missing something, I'm missing something, I'm missing something. Ganja mode is like, whatever. Got this other stuff. Everything's looking good, whatever. You don't ask. You don't sit there and go, duplicate ACK, duplicate ACK, duplicate ACK, duplicate ACK. I'll just wait. And we wait for the server, the sender of this data, to time out. All of a sudden, the sender will have to time out and say, oh, you know what? I didn't get an acknowledgement for that. I'm going to send you this data packet. You're like, oh, whatever. Thanks. And that's it. So it's not considered a fast recovery mode because you just sit and wait for the sender to time out. Fast retransmission is based on duplicate acknowledgments. Wireshark sees duplicate acknowledgments, and then we're within 20 milliseconds of one of those, and so it's called a fast retransmission. Here is a picture that tells a story in Wireshark. Before you build this graph in Wireshark, always pick a data packet, a packet that's got some data in it, not just an acknowledgment packet. Select statistics, TCP stream graph, and there are two time sequence graphs. One of them is a tribute to Richard Stevens, who wrote TCP/IP Illustrated. And so Gerald keeps that in, although it is not as informational as the TCP trace graph. So I'm going to choose TCP trace graph. And that is telling a story. Okay. See the light gray line hovering above what looks like some sort of a ratty black line? That light gray line that's hovering above that is the capability, the available window space, the buffer space that's available. If an app is taking advantage of what is allowed as far as buffer space, those two lines will stay close together. If those two lines ever meet, we have a window zero condition. Bottom left-hand corner, that's a window zero condition. We see the little light gray line, and it kind of flatlines, and then we see the black line come up and meet it. That snarly little black line is actually all I bars. They're all capital letter I's representing a packet worth of data. We can zoom in by clicking the plus key on the keyboard. Just watch where your cursor is when you click the plus key. And then I have a tendency to click it too many times and it goes flying past me. So here is an example of where we have a problem. We have retransmissions and fast retransmissions, and we have duplicate packets, and we have lost packets. So each one of these letter I's right here going up is an individual packet worth of data. Time is across the bottom, and the sequence number is running up the left-hand side. That's how we track what packet we're on. We can see that we had a gap right here. The sequence number jumped, so we had a missing packet. And all those little hanging chads there, those are all duplicate acknowledgments. Look how many times. That's the mother-in-law process. Eee, little hooks and claws into you until finally, finally we see the fast retransmission. That wasn't fast. Holy criminy, that's not fast. It's slow, but it's part of the fast recovery process. So that's a fast retransmission. And meanwhile, we had another packet that was lost along the way, but you can't start complaining about that one until we resolve the first one. So once we get this one, then all of a sudden it's like, well, where's the other one? 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 Along the way, the server timed out waiting for an acknowledgement for this one and just resent it. Right? Kind of weird that it didn't just resent. It would have been nice if it resent this other one first, but oh well. So this is a fast retransmission here. This is a standard retransmission. And this trace file is just full of really horrible behavior. Okay? Bottom left-hand corner on this one was the Windows 0. So now let me show you the one that Wireshark should be able to detect and it can't, and you need to add it. This is a similar problem to a Windows 0 problem, but it's not a Windows 0 problem. So it would be ideal if Wireshark had this built in. The trace file is called http-download-good. Yeah, well, good, it's not really that good. Because we've set that time column to show us from the end of one packet to the end of the next packet, the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to sort on the time column twice, and then go to the very first packet to see any delay. We have a 2.7 second delay in this trace file. So we have a 2.7 second delay, and if I go back to the organization based on number, it was frame number 375 or something like that. I'm going to go to that spot where I had that delay. So here's this delay right there. That delay also has a line that says window update on it. I would guess that the delay has something to do with window update. If you look in this trace file, we're going to get rid of the bytes in flight column. I'm going to right mouse click and remove that column. Sorry, I'm going to go back to ordering by this column. And I'm going to add the window size column here. I want the calculated window size column. So I'm going to right mouse click there. And I'm going to align it to the left. No, that's not going to be. I'm going to align it. Let's center align it so we can see it. Okay. All right. So here is the delay. The delay happened right before this packet was sent. What is the window size of the receiver before that? Oh, God. 536 bytes. See this 536 bytes that this host, it's 10.0.52.164 says, hey, I have 536 bytes of available buffer space. Too bad the server's got 1460 bytes of data queued up. It can't send it. You don't have enough buffer space for one packet worth of data. So the server stops sending to you until you do a window update. You look at something like this and you go, what is wrong with this client? It is so slow. What is going on? You wait forever to send your acknowledgments and things like this. Well, it's the window size. The client's got a problem with window size. Anytime a window size is less than one packets worth, it can cause this problem. So I'm going to set a coloring rule in Wireshark to detect when this problem occurs. I'm going to right mouse click on the window size. I'm going to say colorize with a filter, new coloring rule. I didn't select new coloring rule. Colorize with filter. There we go. New coloring rule. It's going to be a troubleshooting coloring rule, and it's going to be low window size. And it's going to be less than, I'm going to put it at less than 1360, because that's really pretty much the smallest maximum segment size setting I've seen at my customers regularly. So anything below that can cause problems. And I'm going to set it as orange. I still can't type. All right, set it as orange, okay, and don't forget, you have to move your butt uglies up. So move the butt uglies all the way to the top in here. Say OK. And now if I'm looking at any sort of a problem at all, not only will Wireshark show me it because it'll be colored in orange, but it'll also say in the top of every frame, why it's colored that way. And there it is. That's why it's colored orange, because it's a low window size. So I can easily detect that. Okay, now what I want to do is I'm going to move over to the new version of Wireshark and show you just how I would do that in a more effective way in the new version. So the new version of Wireshark, I have to close down some of these windows. The new version of Wireshark will be called 1.8. Right now we are in the 1.6 world. I am using 1.6.5 because 1.6.6 was crap and 1.6.7 is questionable. Let me try to get over to here. I've still got all these windows in the background. Okay. All right, so this is the development version of Wireshark I'm showing you. It's 1.7.2. This is the one that was released yesterday. We have 5 new versions of Wireshark that have been compiled today and are available online, development versions. We will probably be hitting 30 to 40 development versions today. And when the new version of Wireshark comes out, it'll probably be 5 to 6 million downloads in the first 48 hours. Wireshark, if you're not aware, Wireshark has completely taken off in the industry. It's replaced every other protocol analyzer in the main companies. You know, we don't have people lugging around sniffers so much anymore. So this version of Wireshark is 1.7.2. It should probably be out in its 1.8 state in the next 8 weeks, 9 weeks, 10 weeks. This is what I can do with that same line about the window size. So tcp.window_size <1360. In the new version, we have a button up here in the filter area that says save. And I'm going to call it low win. And I'm going to say OK. Now I have a button up here on the right-hand side called low win. I can click on that. This trace file I have doesn't have a window size problem. But now I'm going to open up this http://download-. I do not have it in PCAPNG format. Let me pull it from my other directory. http://download. I swear it's in that directory. Hang on. http. Oh, sorry. I'm still in my PCAPNG directory. There's my PCAP directory. Sorry. http-download. All right, where are you? Dang it. Did you notice it's basically going to the wrong directory structure? That's definitely a bug. Oh, there's a bunch of bugs in here. Earlier, we had the bottom of the screen that was kind of off. So I'll just scroll down to where it is. There it is. I got to remember to report that. Anyway, basically what happens is with the new version of Wireshark, you put up something up there on the filter line, something you always look for, like low window. You can click on it, and it'll show you any packet that matches it. Here's another one where we made this earlier, a file with a .exe or a .zip in it. There it is. Somebody's downloading an executable. So we can actually put all these things right up on the top of the Wireshark window to tell us, you know, when we have these kinds of problems. All right, last thing I want to mention to you. Don't forget to get the LoRa's Lab Kit. It's free at lcuportal2.com. Get the LoRa's Lab Kit, and it's got the video training on it, and it's also got all of the videos that are in the Wireshark book. On the Wireshark book website, you'll see all the videos. Lab Kit 11 will be out probably in 3 months, I think it's going to take to do Lab Kit 11. There also will be some new books on Wireshark and TCP/IP for people that are kind of newer to it and don't want to do an 800-page book. Imagine that, although it's very good for you. Like that guy that leaped over the chairs, I bet he was using that book to stand on. So, all right, everybody, I hope you have a really great conference. If you have any questions, you can email me. Thank you.